So continuing with the reading of the Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 7, today's verse is verse number 39. We have to thank the Bhaktivedanta Archives for the database. So, verse 39 goes like this.
Suradvisham Shriyam Guptam Oshanasya Pividyaya Achidyadan Mahindraya Vaishnavya Vidyaya Vibhu.
Okay, word for word, a Suradvisham of the enemies of the demigods. Shriyam, the opulence. Guptam, protected. Anushanasya, sorry, Aushanasya of Shukracharya. Api, although, Vidyaya, by the talents. Achidya, collecting. Adat, delivered. Mahaindraya, unto King Indra. Vaishnavya, of Lord Vishnu. Vidyaya, by a prayer. Vibhu, the most powerful Vishvarupa. So here's a translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. The opulence of the demons, who are generally known as the enemies of the demigods, was protected by the talents and tactics of Shukracharya. But Vishwarup, who was most powerful, composed a protective prayer known as the Narayana Kavacha. By this intelligent mantra, he took away the opulence of the demons and gave it to Mahendra, the King of Heaven. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Prabhupada says, the distinction between the demigods or devas and the demons, asuras, is that the demigods are all devotees of Lord Vishnu, whereas the demons are devotees of demigods like Lord Shiva, Goddess Kali, and Goddess Durga. Sometimes the demons are also devotees of Lord Brahma. For example, Hiranyakashipu was a devotee of Lord Brahma, Ravana was a devotee of Lord Shiva, and Mahishasura was a devotee of Goddess Durga. The demigods are devotees of Lord Vishnu, Vishnu Bhakta Smrito Daiva, whereas the demons, Asuras Tadvipariya, are always against the Vishnu Bhaktas, or Vaishnavas. To oppose the Vaishnavas, the demons become devotees of Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, Kali, Durga, and so on. We see this in the context of India centuries ago, maybe a little bit today, but in European context, if there's anyone who's against the Vaishnavas, they're not worshipping Kali or Shiva, thinking, okay, we're against the Vaishnavas, let us worship Shiva and Kali and Durga. Here it's just basically crude atheism, and maybe a little bit of fanaticism from other monotheistic traditions. But Prabhupada writes what he writes. He continues. In the days of yore, many long years ago, there was animosity between the gods and the asuras, and the same spirit still continues. For the devotees of Lord Shiva and Goddess Durga are always envious of Vaishnavas, who are devotees of Lord Vishnu. This strain between the devotees of Lord Shiva and Lord Vishnu has always existed. We see this in the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, how the non-Vaishnavas of Navadvip became very envious of the Vaishnavas. And that's precisely why they tried to get the king, the Muslim king, right? Nawab Hussein Shah, to discriminate, to become even violent against the Vaishnavas. Kolavichar Sridhar, for example, we hear, you know, the story of the banana leaf vendor, a pure devotee of the Lord who was a very poor businessman, extremely poor businessman who just had banana leaves and selling on the market. And every day he would have arguments with Lord Chaitanya, who would love to come and bargain with him for prices. Is this way too expensive? No, this is. I'm not making any profit. Or if he is, he would give it all to Mother Ganga. This reminds me, as a short parenthesis, I find this a very cute story. When Srila Prabhupada came to America, you know, coming from India where there is a culture of, you know, of bargaining for a price. You just don't go, now more and more, but before you don't go into a shop and, okay, how much is this? 100 rupees. Okay, you dish out 100 rupees. So you say, okay, I'll give you 50. No. This is, okay, I'll give 90. You bargain. That's a culture in India, but not in the West. So there's a story when Prabhupada came to America in 1965. One of the first days he went to a supermarket to buy some vegetables. And there was this young lady, you know, part-time job behind the counter. And so Prabhupada came with his vegetables, whatever. And she said, okay, she rung him up and said, okay, this is, you know, $3.60. And Prabhupada said, I'll give you $2.90. And she looked at him and she's like, no, sir, it's $3.60. Okay, $3.15. Not anything more. She's like, no, sir, it's a fixed price. And speaking of the fight between the demigods or the devotees of Lord Shiva and Lord Vishnu, if I may, I remember I went to Madurai one time, this South Indian center of Shaivism, and they have this beautiful temple of Meenakshi, where there's this very famous Shiva Lingam. I was with Japataka Maharaj's safari, so we had some time, so I went there alone to take darshan. And so I was like the only white guy in the whole sanctum, and there was a pretty long line, you know, in the inner sanctum to go have darshan of Lord Shiva. And the curtains were closed, so there must have been about 50 people just waiting for the curtains to open and the line to continue. And there was this South Indian Brahmin there who was like, the, you know, the, one of the pujaris of the Meenakshi temple, probably for hundreds of years of generations, with three horizontal, you know, Lord, like the Shaivite three horizontal lines. So he was speaking to people, and all Indians, all South Indians, and I said, excuse me, Pandit, a little bit loud. And he looked at me, everyone turned around. I said, please tell me. And I said it in a sweet, with a smile. He understood I was joking. So I said, Panditji, who is supreme? Lord Vishnu or Lord Shiva? And then everybody in the audience started laughing. And he looked at me incredulously and looked around. He said, who do you think I will say? I'm like, duh, you know, you're in a Shiva temple here. Who do you think I will say? Vishnu? Of course not. And everyone laughed. It was a sweet moment. This is just to illustrate what Prabhupada is saying here about this long strain, as he says, between the devotees of Lord Shiva and Lord Vishnu has always existed. I don't think there's been any sort of violent, you know, interactions between the Shaivites and the Vaishnavas, as there has been, you know, even among Christianity, you see what the Protestant wars against the Catholic or Catholic, you know, what to speak of the Muslims, the Shiites, and the whatever. I mean, so when we talk about a strain, it's not that much pronounced, at least in terms of violence. But Prabhupada says here, in the higher planetary systems, fights between the demons and the demigods continue for a long, long time. And this chapter seven, is about this fight between the gods and the demigods and the demons, and how because the gods, specifically Indra, disrespected their guru, Brihaspati. He lost the shelter of his of their guru, and as a result became weak, and all the demons started attacking them. And the text says, you know, they were being attacked with weapons and arrows, and so there was violence. So, Prabhupada continues. Herein we see that Vishvarupa, for those who may not know, Vishvarupa was a character that Brahma told the demigods, go and ask him to become your priest. Because now you've lost your guru, you've lost the shelter of Brihaspati. He's invisible, he made himself invisible. And so even Indra, feeling bad, oh my God, I offended my guru. Let's look for him, let's apologize to him. Couldn't find him because he had made himself invisible, the text describes. So they went to see Brahma. Brahma, what do we do? Now the demons are attacking us. And so Lord Brahma said, okay, go to Vishwarup and he will act as your priest or as your guru. So that's who Vishwarupa is. Prabhupada says, herein we see that Vishwarupa made for the demigods a protective covering saturated with a Vishnu mantra. Sometimes the Vishnu mantra is called Vishnu Jvara and the Shiva mantra is called Shiva Jvara. We find in the Shastras that sometimes the Shiva Jvara and Vishnu Jvara are employed in the fights between the demons and the demigods. The words Surat Visham, which in this verse means of the enemies of the demigods, also refers to the atheists. Srimad Bhagavatam elsewhere says that Lord Buddha appeared for the purpose of bewildering the demons or atheists. The Supreme Personality of Godhead always awards his benedictions to devotees. The Lord himself confirms this in Bhagavad Gita, Kaunteya prachijanihi name bhakta pranashyati. O son of Kunti, declare it boldly that my devotee never perishes. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Just a few last words on this purport before we go on to this part two of preaching why and how. It's interesting that even though the demigods lost the shelter of their guru because they committed an offense to him, because they were demigods and because they were still servants of Krishna, Krishna made an arrangement through Brahma so that they could get another guru. And this teaches us what Prabhupada taught us, what Prabhupada explains, what our tradition teaches, namely that we can, and in many cases devotees have, more than one spiritual master in their life. There's one Diksha Guru, and then there's that Diksha Guru can act as Shiksha Guru, and most often does. And as circumstance would have it, devotees often also take shiksha or instruction from other spiritual teachers that inspire them, right? And in the context of ISKCON, Prabhupada is the preeminent shiksha guru for all devotees of Krishna. His instructions are the foundation for all devotees who are operating within ISKCON. So it's kind of nice. We have a Diksha Guru. We have a or many Shiksha Gurus who inspire us. And within that bouquet of flowers, we have a prominent rose, which is Srila Prabhupada and his instructions. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So, day two of this little seminar on preaching, we have about a half hour. Yesterday we covered certain key verses from the Bhagavad Gita. We covered two verses that deal specifically with the importance of spreading Krishna consciousness, helping the mission spread, helping spread the holy name of Krishna. And then we saw a second verse that dealt with how to do that. The last verse of the 11th chapter of the Gita, wherein Krishna says that one should be friendly to all living entities. And interestingly enough, Prabhupada says in the purport to that verse that this is the essence of Bhagavad Gita. Even though he didn't quote this verse very much in his lectures, in the purport to that verse, which mentions that one should be friendly to all living entities, Prabhupada says this is the essence of the Bhagavad Gita. Prabhu, I forget your name. Lalita Govinda Prabhu yesterday was asking me to say a few words about this idea that sometimes the devotee's intention may be good, But in practice, we may be doing sort of a disservice to the very people we're trying to serve. And Lalita Govinda Prabhu was giving the example of, for example, being a little bit overzealous or over enthusiastic, you know, for spreading Krishna consciousness. As long as it stays innocent, it's innocent, you know, but it can turn somebody off if, for example, you know, we come to them and, you know, who likes to be approached by someone who's very, 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 like, over the top zealous about their, you know, their spirit, religious convictions. I remember for a while in Paris, maybe 10 years ago, me, Gadadhar Priya Prabhu, Bhaktin Sara, and one or two other devotees, we would do a program called Metro Yoga, where we'd go in the Paris metro and we would do a kirtan inside the train and interrupt it and tell people, hello, we are the Metro Yoga at your service. You don't have to do hatha yoga at home. You can do your yoga right here in the metro while you're going home from work. It's free and you just have to listen to these mantras. And we also give you a free vegetarian cookie as part of our deal. And so there was this one devotee. He was from Marseille, from South France. Bhakta Julio. And this young man, he had a little bit of a psychological... He was, you know, he's mentally a little handicapped. But he loved distributing prasadam. He was like crazy about distributing prasadam. Like his faith in the effect of prasadam was just like, you know, and all he loved to do was to go with us, and then he had a little, you know, silver or metal tray box with ladus or cookies, and then he had one of these little, you know, cocktail like you know, thing that you that takes the object. And so he would go up and down in the train and pass out the cookies as we were doing chanting. So I'll always remember one day we were on the actual train platform waiting for the next train to come. We would, you know, whip out the Bhagavad Gita, read a little bit to each other, and then when the train comes, we put it back in, start the kirtan, go inside. And so there was just, so while we were waiting for this train, the platform was quite empty, and then this very distinguished looking lady, maybe in her late 50s, you know, typical Parisian, super well-dressed, black, with a, you know, everything matching, with a nose a little high, was walking towards us. And so Bhakti Julio, he saw her, you know, in his eyes, he saw, you know, prasadam distribution target, you know. So he started running to her. And as he was about to reach her, he tripped on something and he fell to the floor. And so the piece of prasadam he was holding in his hand, you know, fell to the floor. On the floor, the, you know, the ground, the dirty ground with cigarette, you know, leftovers and dust and, you know, really dirty metro floor ground. And so he was on his four legs and hands, and the piece of prasadam was on the floor, and this lady was looking at him, and he was looking at her, and there was like a pause, and he was just like, you know, thinking. And then he picked up the prasadam and got up and came to her and said, and he was like wiping it off. He says, please take it, ma'am. It's prasadam. It never gets contaminated. An example of maybe not the right thing to do. But he was so sincere. And she could see this boy's sincerity. So she politely said, oh, thank you. And she took it. She didn't eat it. But, you know, she put it away. And maybe she threw it away later. But she didn't, you know, she wanted to reciprocate with his sincerity. Yeah, we have many, many stories, isn't it? Our ISKCON history is filled with well-intentioned efforts that may not be of the, you know, the most sensitivity. Like, you know, in America in 1970s, there was this Radha Damodar party, where they had the deities of Radha Damodar. You had all these brahmacharis crisscrossing the United States, distributing books. You know, picking up a guy from the street, putting him in one entrance of the bus, and then by the time he came out the other side, he was shaved, you know, in saffron clothes and tilak on his nose. So one time, one Radha Damodar party, pulled into some little town. And the next day, you know, they left early morning, and the next day there was a newspaper article of the local town saying, you know, robbers came in the middle of the night and stole all the flowers of the garden of the city hall, and nothing else was stolen. You know, because devotees needed flowers to do their puja, so they saw all these beautiful flowers in the public garden of the city hall. They thought, Yukta Vairagya, you know, engage it in Krishna's service. So in the middle of the night, they stole all the flowers. Anyway, I find that really funny. So I think with time, we mature in our Krishna consciousness, in our presentation, especially of Krishna consciousness. Okay, so we spoke about Bhagavad Gita. Now in the next maybe 20 minutes, we can quote two or three verses from the Bhagavatam. Two or three important verses on this topic of the importance of preaching. Okay? So I picked one from the first canto, from the fourth canto, and the famous one that Prabhupada loved to quote from the seventh canto, Prahlad Maharaj's prayers. So, this first one, please repeat after me. This one glorifies Narada Muni, who is right here on the altar as Shivas Thakur Ki Jai. So, this verse glorifies indirectly or directly Shivas Thakur in his former incarnation as Narada Muni. So, please repeat after me. All glories and success to Srila Narada Muni. Because he glorifies the activities of the personality of Godhead. And so doing, he himself takes pleasure and also enlivens all the distressed souls of the universe. You know how there's this, the Madhyama Adhikari, Kanishta Adhikari, and Uttama Adhikari, right? Does anyone not know this distinction? The Bhagavatam describes as three kinds of devotees. There's the neophyte, the beginner, called the Kanishta Adhikari, whose faith is not very strong, and who doesn't know the scriptures very well. Then there's the Madhyama Adhikari, the middle stage devotee, where we're trying to operate on that platform. And the Madhyama Adhikari, or the medium range devotee, has strong faith, or the faith is not so strong, but he knows scriptures really well, right? He's able to explain the philosophy. And then the Uttama Adhikari has, you know, extremely, extremely deep faith, and also knows, you know, our scriptures very well. The Uttama Adhikari is so advanced that he sees everybody as servants of Krishna. Even though they may not be actually engaged in Krishna's service, he just sees them as, you know, as who they are originally, constitutionally, which is, our Chaitanya Charitamrita states, an eternal servant of Krishna. Nitya Siddha Krishna, Jivera Swarup Hoya Krishnera Nitya Das, the Swarup, the function of the soul, is Krishnera Nitya Das, is the eternal servant of Krishna. So the Uttama, the super advanced devotee, just sees souls, and even though they may be engaged in sinful activities and being, you know, in ignorance of and rejection of God, he just sees them all as servants of Krishna. And he's, because of his humility, he thinks, I'm the only one who is not a devotee. And so by definition, the very advanced devotee cannot preach. Because if you were seeing everybody as more advanced than you, and you're the only one who's not a devotee, how can you preach? So the function of preaching, actually, the activity of trying to reach out to others, help them come take their steps towards Krishna, their first step or their 500th step, is mostly done by the Madhyama Adhikaris, by the middle class devotees. But what's interesting is that, and Prabhupada describes this somewhere, the activity of preaching is so relishable, he describes, so pleasurable, the activity of sharing Krishna with others gives so much pleasure, that the Uttama Adhikari comes down to the platform of a Madhyama Adhikari so that he can preach and so that he can experience this nectar of preaching. So here in this verse, in Narada Muni, we understand, we believe, is a super, super advanced soul. He's an eternally liberated soul who just travels from one planet to the other across the universe, just no visa, no passport, just with his vina, ding, dong, 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 and he just travels and just delivers fallen souls all over the universe. And the Bhagavatam says here, he in doing so, he takes pleasure. He takes pleasure. And I think we've all experienced it to a small degree, isn't it? And if you're not enjoying sharing Krishna consciousness with others, then you're doing something wrong, maybe. Right? Maybe you're attached to the result. Maybe you're... Well, there's many reasons that you can ascertain yourself. But just like the holy name is very sweet, so the activity of sharing the holy name with others is also very sweet. So sweet, supposedly, that even, you know, the greatest devotees come down to the platform of middle class devotee in order to do this service because it brings so much pleasure to the soul. Pure pleasure, spiritual pleasure. The Lilamrita of Prabhupada describes how when devotees first started distributing Srila Prabhupada's books in America, they were caught by this euphoria, right? Where they would just want to stay out in the streets and simply share Prabhupada's books with others. Harinamananda Prabhu, this famous devotee from Harikesh Swami's time in Switzerland, he was like a big hero for me when I was a brahmachari in Los Angeles. We would, you know, read about these book distributors in Europe, especially in Switzerland. And he would say that, you know, when it's time to go home, I'm unhappy. You know, it's 10 p.m., you've been out all day trying to share Krishna consciousness with others, and now the prospect of having to go back home and, you know, sleep and fall into the mode of ignorance and having to wake up the next morning all moded out and having to, you know, pick yourself back up to the mode of goodness, what to speak of transcendence. I'd rather be out and distribute books all the time. We've been in kirtans that were great, right? Where you don't want the kirtan to stop. I remember we were doing Harinam once on the Polish beach on Indradyumna Maharaj's Polish tour. And so we were doing kirtan on the beach and we would stop every maybe 50 meters because people wanted to take pictures with the devotees. So devotees would have to pose and the ladies with their fans and the Prabhus, I guess, showing their muscles with the mridangas. And so at one point, though, you know, we're chanting, and there was this young man standing maybe 10 meters away, and he was looking at the devotees, and he had tears streaming down his eyes. He was obviously touched by the sound vibration of the kirtan, by the experience. So I was looking at him, like, I was playing the drum, and I was looking at this guy, and I was like, wow, you know, he's really experiencing something now. And I remember Indradyumna Swami saw me looking at this guy and noticed that I was, you know, impressed by this gentleman's, you know, emotions. So Indradyumna Swami came to my ear and he said, "There's no higher nectar. There's no higher nectar." And, you know, to see, to witness a soul, you know, taking his or her first step to Krishna after... Theoretically, you know, millions and millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of lifetimes of just zombieing their life in ignorance, just trying to grab sense pleasures as the goal of life, and dying, and then doing it again, and dying, and doing it again, and dying, life after life after life. And now, you know, they get a little experience, a little trailer. You know, when you go see a movie, you have the trailer of the movies that are going to come. Coming to your theater near you in 3 months, you know, I don't know, James Bond number 59. So these are experiences we live for. And the pure devotee, they come down to this platform. So Narada Muni takes pleasure and enlivens all the distressed souls of the universe. Let's look at the second verse out of the three verses. You follow? I'm not boring you too much, I hope. Okay. This verse comes from Canto 4. So please repeat after me. The Vaikuntha planets. Does anyone not know what a Vaikuntha planet is? Okay. The Vaikuntha planets cannot be reached by those who are not merciful to other living entities. Only persons who constantly engage in welfare activities for other living entities can reach the Vaikuntha planets. So when we sign up, you know, on the contract, when we sign up for Lord Chaitanya's movement, we basically agree that we're going to live a life, you know, dedicated to helping others come to Krishna. Isn't it? It's like an open secret of the, you know, of the contract of joining the Sankirtan movement of Lord Chaitanya. You know, some people don't like proselytizing religions. You know, why are you giving me a Bible? Why are you giving me a Bhagavad Gita? Why are you telling me about Jesus? Or why are you telling me about Allah or whatever? You know. Monotheistic traditions all share this thing of wanting to share the good news with others. So we've joined an extreme monotheistic tradition in the sense that this sense of, you know, Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam, an extreme concept of personhood, you know, God being a person par excellence with a specific name and even, you know, a father's name and a mother's name and a place of residence with a specific name and a very specific, right, theology or concept of heaven or the spiritual world. And so, yeah, we're our business, so to speak, is, you know, practicing Krishna consciousness and sharing it with others. So our responsibility, whether we're, you know, brand new devotees or super advanced devotees or monks living in a temple or householders living in their own homes, our meditation should be, how can I be used as the most efficient instrument in Lord Chaitanya's hands to spread Krishna consciousness? Because I want to go back to Goloka Vrindavan. I want to go back to these Vaikuntha planets. And here the Bhagavatam says, you know, these planets are, you don't have access to these planets unless you are merciful to other living entities. So, you know, for our own self benefit, we want to share Krishna consciousness with others. And that's okay. You know, one could say, well, that's selfish. But it's a pure desire. I mean, to want to go back to the kingdom of God and associate with God eternally, and doing whatever is necessary to do that, okay, it may be a little selfish, but it's totally pure, for God's sakes. If you actually have compassion and you really see the suffering, I'm not saying I do, but if you actually feel like Prabhupada, you know, was driven in Los Angeles near Rancho Park, this park where people play golf. And as he was being driven, he saw some old men playing golf. And he started crying. Now, I don't know about you, if I pass by a park and see some old men playing golf, I don't cry. Maybe I get jealous. Well, you know, they're rich and they have time and I have to go to work. But Prabhupada started crying. And then he said, these poor men, you know, they've obtained this rare human form of life, he was saying. They've obtained this rare human form of life after millions of incarnations, and now they're going to die soon. And instead of using their precious time that is left for them to think about Krishna, they're wasting these few last moments throwing a ball into a hole in the ground. It's a whole different vision. A genuine compassion. I remember when I was a brahmachari distributing Srila Prabhupada's books in the Los Angeles airport, the temple president, Suvas Prabhu, he would sometimes give us, you know, a talk to encourage us to go and distribute Srila Prabhupada's books. And I always remember, he said, you know, don't be fooled by the opulence of these people walking through the airport. Now remember, this is Hollywood. So you have, you know, all the superstars, whatever, they all pass through that airport. And even, you know, even ordinary people, when you go to the airport, you know, you make sure you dress nicely, and what to speak if you're a multi-billionaire. And so we would, you know, be there at the airport with our little, you know, pants and shirt and card, you know, ISKCON, Bhagavad Gita, and you see, you know, very, very, very wealthy, rich, you know, beautiful, handsome people walking through, you know, as if, you know, they're gods, you know. And so you would feel intimidated. You know, why should I approach this person? He seems quite happy. You know, I have spiritual happiness here, but that person seems a lot happier than I am. You know, why should I approach him to give him so-called spiritual happiness? But I remember Swavas would say, no, you know, don't be fooled by that. You know, everyone's suffering in this material world. And, you know, so whether we're actually really seeing how the pure devotees see and how the scriptures see, or we just really just want to get out of the material world and go back to Krishna, we have to be merciful and preach. So that's verse 2 of the Bhagavatam. Narada Muni, the mercy verse. And we have one last verse in the last 10 minutes. This is the verse from Prahlad Maharaj in the 7th canto, which Srila Prabhupada totally embodied and embraced. Harikesh Swami, he says how once in Vrindavan, he told Prabhupada, it really seems like you're in the mood of Prahlad Maharaj. And Prabhupada supposedly replied to Harikesh, yes, I'm always thinking of these fools and rascals. That's what this verse is. So it's kind of long, but let's read it together. Okay? So please repeat. O best of the great personalities, I am not at all afraid of material existence. Because wherever I stay, I am fully absorbed in thoughts of your glories and activities. My concern is only for the fools and rascals. That's Prabhupada, isn't it? You know, like every author has a style. You know, you can recognize the author immediately by the way he writes, or even, you know, a singer, you hear some famous singer's voice. Oh, that's so and so, right? So, you know, only Prabhupada would translate this verse as fools and rascals. But that's how he translated it. So, I am only concerned for fools and rascals who are making elaborate plans for material happiness and maintaining their families, societies, and countries. I'm simply concerned with love for them. My dear Lord Nrisingadev, I see that there are many saintly persons, but they are interested only in their own deliverance, not caring for the big cities and towns. They go to the Himalayas or the forest to meditate with vows of silence. They are not interested in delivering others. As for me, however, I do not wish to be liberated alone, leaving aside these poor fools and rascals. I know that without Krishna consciousness, without taking shelter of your lotus feet, one cannot be happy. Therefore, I wish to bring them back to the shelter at your lotus feet. So I'll just finish with this distinction that we should remember, the distinction between Bhajananandi and Goshtyananandi. Two kinds of devotees. The Goshtyananandi and the Bhajananandi. The Bhajananandi, we hear the word bhajan in it. And that is typically a devotee who doesn't preach so much, but chants, does bhajan. The Goshtyananandi is concerned with, you know, giving that bhajan to others. And while both are, you know, legitimate ways to practice Krishna consciousness, we can pretty confidently say from what we read from Prabhupada, his own life, his own activities, that, you know, ISKCON, the movement that we're part of, has a very strong vein of Goshtyananandi in it. Preaching. The Prabhupada used to say, you know, what is it? Work now, samadhi later. You heard that saying? Work now, samadhi later. Right? So work means, you know, our basic sadhana, our chanting our rounds attentively, getting them done in one day, you know, trying our best, following these four regulative principles we're supposed to follow, waking up early in the morning, at least trying to do chanting while Brahma Muhurta is going on. You know, you've heard of Brahma Muhurta? Brahma Muhurta is an hour and a half before the sunrise. 45 minutes starting from an hour and a half before sunrise, or 45 minutes, excuse me, is a period of time called Brahma Muhurta. Muhurta in Sanskrit or Hindi means like a time slot. And so the Brahma Muhurta is designated as those 45 minutes before that start an hour and a half before sunrise. So for example, sunrise is at 7 in the morning, Brahma Muhurta starts at 5:30 till 6:15. That is the most important period of the day. The most important period of the day. And there's all sorts of apps, you know, you can get all these apps for Android or iPhone, where you can know exactly what is the Brahma Muhurta period of each day. And unless you live like in Iceland or in Siberia, where, you know, in the winter or in the summer, you know, Brahma Muhurta starts at 3 in the morning, and you may not want to wake up at 3 in the morning, which is totally understandable. Usually for most of the world, it's doable in terms of being up and awake during Brahma Muhurta. So if I have one advice for you, you know, because ultimately preaching is based on being empowered by Krishna. And even though it's not a mechanical process, we do have to do the best, you know, what's favorable to become empowered by Krishna, to get the mercy of Krishna. Krishna Shakti Vinana Hetar Pravartana. So, one thing to do is to be awake and clean, or at least awake, during Brahma Muhurta. During Brahma Muhurta. Right now, here, Brahma Muhurta starts at 5:15 or 5:16 in Ljubljana these days. So, like from 5:15 to 6, you know, we should like, and again, I'm preaching to myself because I have a hard time, you know, not checking my emails and social media, you know, right away when I wake up. But those 45 minutes are very important. We should, you know, put down everything else and really just focus, either if we're doing a kirtan or chanting japa at home or reading the Bhagavatam, hearing a lecture. Because if we can do, you know, if you can be Krishna conscious during those 45 minutes, then the rest of the day is very much influenced by those 45 minutes, whatever you put in there. So maybe tomorrow we can speak about empowerment, being empowered, you know, to spread Krishna consciousness. Right now we've kind of discussed the importance. We've seen it in the Bhagavad Gita. We've seen it in the Bhagavatam. And maybe starting tomorrow we can talk about Lord Chaitanya's and his empowering others to spread Krishna consciousness, the principle of, you know, being empowered in order to spread Krishna consciousness. Jai. So thank you for your patience, and have a great Krishna conscious day. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna. Thank you.